Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. Well, the minute these midterm elections are decided, the campaign will begin for the 2020 election. In fact, Donald Trump filed for his re-election the day after Inauguration Day 2 years ago, and the convention that will likely renominate him for a second four-year term will be here in Charlotte. The 2020 Republican National Convention will bring an influx of cash to the local economy provided by the tens of thousands of people who will descend on Charlotte for that week in July, and with them come serious security concerns and crowd control issues, and that's something CMPD Chief Kerr Putney is already working on, but he wants to engage you well in advance. So he joins us for the remainder of the hour to talk about that and about a new initiative called Bridging the Difference, conversations about policing, community relations, trust, and public safety. Welcome back to the program. Good to see you.
Thank you, sir. Glad to be back.
Last Monday, I got to start with this. Last Monday, there was a shooting at Butler High School. I know that's in Matthews, but the next day, a gun was found at Garinger High School, which is in Charlotte. CMS leads the state in the number of guns found on campuses. I think it accounts for 20% of those instances, despite having only 10% of the enrollment around the state. Superintendent Clayton Wilcox was on this program yesterday, and he said that this disparity speaks to much larger societal issues in Charlotte, not to the schools. What's your take on that?
I don't disagree that we have a lot of weapons, a lot of guns in this country, but we have to take steps, and I think CMS is moving in that direction as well to make sure that weapons aren't on schools. Just because they exist in the city doesn't mean we want them on school grounds.
Was CMPD involved at all in the Butler incident, or was that strictly Matthews police?
It was all Matthews. We helped with traffic control, that kind of thing, but we were not the primary. It was all Matthews.
And CMPD has 51, as I understand it, 51 police officers.
That's correct.
Assigned to 47 middle and high schools in the system, and they work closely with CMS police. They have their own
CMS law enforcement, exactly.
You're heavily involved in evaluating security at all these schools. Clayton Wilcox said that they learned some things from the Butler incident, and that one thing they learned was that much of what they've done in terms of beefing up security, and they've done this twice now in the aftermath of Sandy Hook and again after Parkland, much of what they've done is what he called after action. They don't stop the intruder from getting in. In this case, the student was the intruder. He was supposed to be there. So would things have been different, do you think, had it been an outsider or somebody who used to go to the school but no longer goes and just wanted to go in there and wreak havoc?
Well, from my perspective, I think the superintendent's right in his assessment, where they're trying to make sure no one gets on campus with a weapon. It's a pretty heavy lift, to be quite frank with you. The campuses are very open. They were built decades ago. Moving forward, there will be less opportunities for you to walk right into campus. They will be able to secure those entranceways
to the building. On schools we build,
yes,
in
sir,
the future.
Moving forward, yes, correct. But right now, it's a pretty daunting task because, yes, that was a student who was there. It was an isolated incident. It was between two students, so it wasn't as random. But still, it's disconcerting. We have to do more to protect our schools.
Well, you have said that you have recommended increased monitoring of social media to look for potential threats aimed at schools or at students. Could that have helped in this case? Is there any way for you to know that?
I tell you, the way it works is a student will alert someone that they have had a threat or been threatened themselves or are aware of a threat, so that then you can, as a law enforcement agency, intervene. It could have assisted. This time, we weren't so lucky.
They also found out that some parents were not going to be stopped from coming to the school or trying to get into the school to get their children because they knew that their children were in danger.
Sure.
And that kind of behavior, parents not obeying police and staying behind the lines, can be dangerous because first responders and others can't get in. They block the traffic. They block the pathways. And had there been a random shooter, it could have been dangerous for the parents themselves. Is there a solution to that? You've got a bunch of very anxious parents over
sure.
here.
Sure. I think the superintendent's already talked about it. We got to communicate better. There has to be a plan, and what we've had our SROs do is meet with the administration.
SROs are
school resource officers. That's correct. All 51 have reached out to their schools to talk about what that plan should look like. Mm-hmm. So they want to make sure they can tell the parents exactly where to go. There was some confusion in this case. And then they can have the communication go directly to the parents so they know exactly what's going on. So there's not as much stress and to be honest with you, miscommunication, as it were, in this particular incident.
You have offered schools, and I presume they've taken you up on this, active survival training.
Yes.
A week or so before the shooting at Butler, they had conducted active shooter drills. Are those the same things? Is that the same thing?
Yes. Active survival is just a better term we use. We want to make sure we don't get to the shooting part, so we want to be more proactive. It's more than semantics. But, yes, that is the type of training that we deliver.
And what are you recommending in those situations?
Sure. Well, it's going to depend on the case, but mostly we want to make sure that we're sheltering in place and that our people have an escape route.
Right.
So it's gone through many iterations of what the best procedure to do. And what we've settled on is just that if you can secure your room, you do so.
Yeah.
If you have an escape route, we prefer you to try to maybe a window or whatever to get out and away from the active violence that is going on.
Well, the school at Butler on Monday, Superintendent Wilcox said within a minute or so, everybody had gone to a classroom, any classroom.
Sure.
That was the process.
Absolutely.
And it was exactly followed the way it was supposed to be followed. Get into a classroom, barricade the door, et cetera, and get out of the way. And it seemed to work. And, of course, that means they had to go to second period so that they could figure out who was there, because they didn't take roll when all these kids were in the wrong classroom.
Yeah, but you know what? The outcome is nobody further was injured.
Right.
And that's the goal. So if there's some confusion about where everybody is, that's okay. We're going to get there, mitigate the situation, get it under control, and then we start assessing where all of our students
are. So they followed the protocol that they had rehearsed, and in your opinion, that is the correct thing to do?
And it worked, yes.
Okay. Months before this happened, you suggested reducing entrance to schools to
one location. I said a lot of things, Mike, yes.
You suggested installing metal detectors and wanding everybody who comes into a school building. You're smiling about this. None of that was done. Is that why you're smiling? And there are reasons in each instance, I suppose, for not doing that. Do you stand by those recommendations? Should we be doing any or all of these things?
Well, listen, I'm going to leave that to the superintendent. I meant every syllable of the words that I said.
Okay.
I'm passionate about making sure we keep our students as safe as possible, thus those recommendations. And there's a cost to them. So the other issue, the main issue that Superintendent and I have talked about is the layout of the schools. It's difficult to do all of those things with the way we're currently structured in our schools. So a lot of work has to be done in the area of fencing to make sure when you're entering a school, there's but one way in so that some of those other recommendations could be performed.
Are there any other measures that you think should be implemented, particularly in light of what happened both Monday at Butler and Tuesday at Garinger?
I think the security response worked.
Okay.
I just would like for us to be a bit more proactive when our youth, I suspect somebody knew that there was some issues going on between the parties. Just being able to articulate that so that we can intervene is what I hope we could do better in the future.
So once again, if you see something, say something.
Absolutely.
And evidently that did not happen in this case.
Apparently it didn't happen well enough, yes.
Because one of the parents, the parent of the victim, I believe, felt that the school system should have notified them that there was a problem, and the school system didn't know. What role do parents have to play in all of this?
It's layers of protection, and the first layer can be the parents. When you see your kid is having some issue with another student, you have to alert the authorities. You have to make sure the school's aware and the police are aware so that we can intervene. And then from there, it becomes incumbent upon the students. It becomes incumbent the teachers also who are aware or notice things that are going in a, you know, a particular direction so that we can, again, intervene and prevent something like this from happening.
Chief Kerputny from CMPD is here primarily to talk about something called Bridging the Difference, which gets underway later this month, and also about preparations for the 2020 Republican National Convention. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk with Robert Dawkins with Action NC when we come back. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaOfSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. CMPD Chief Kirk Putney is with us. It takes everybody to be part of a solution, it seems, and you'd like people to be involved and prepared for what Charlotte will face for the 2020 Republican National Convention when it comes to town in July of that year. And part of that is helping people to have a better understanding of police and police in the community. And to that end, you are starting a public safety community engagement initiative called Bridging the Difference, beginning on November the 15th. And we're going to talk about that and add to this conversation Robert Dawkins, the political director for Action NC and the founder and state organizer for Safe Coalition NC, which works to end discriminatory profiling and promote civil liberty protections for all state residents. Robert Dawkins, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Mike. Glad to be here.
Good to see you. Gord, good to hear from you because you're on the phone. There are several components to this initiative. First are the protests that many believe may materialize during the RNC. Another is letting people know how you intend to spend the money that the federal government is going to give you to help beef up security, ramp up security. And the final piece is bringing citizens into this so that they buy into your plans as a police department before this convention arises, and also just in policing in general.
Yes, sir.
So first, do you think there will be massive protests at the RNC?
I am confident that people will want to come out and exercise their First Amendment rights. With every convention. We had it in 2012, and I readily expect that we'll have the same or similar in 2020.
Well, we heard that there might be these massive protests during the Democratic convention when it was here, and it really didn't happen.
No, we did have quite a few people who came. It was the height of the Occupy movement, so they did come to the city. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people locally, too, who did their protests to get their message out, but it wasn't to the degree that people were expecting.
And you think this will be different this time for whatever reason?
Well, I don't know. I think we could get larger numbers, mm-hmm. but it remains to see what happens over the next couple of years.
Your department got high compliments for the way they handled themselves and handled the protesters at the Democratic National Convention. Will the approach be substantially different for the RNC?
No, not really. We've learned to have a layered approach. It's sequential. We want to make sure people can exercise their rights to free speech, obviously, but we're going to be on the lookout for any escalation that might lead to violence or unrest that we need to address.
And one would presume, and I could be completely wrong about this, that any protests, violent or otherwise, that might happen during the Republican National Convention will be fundamentally fomented and participated in by outsiders, not Charlatans. Would that be accurate?
Potentially. And the work we're doing with Bridging the Difference is making sure we can find that common ground here as a city already so that we have our eyes and ears on the street who can help us be proactive in guarding against anyone outside coming in, committing violence and trying to disrupt.
So, Robert Dawkins, what does that mean to you? He just said what he wants to get out of citizens of Charlotte in advance of this. What does that mean to you?
So I'm totally aligned with what Chief Putney has said, and that's what we at Safe Coalition also want to see. We want to be part of Bridging the Difference, and we're going to be part of Bridging the Difference. We're also going to be working. We're federated with a lot of progressive groups from around the country. We were one of the key organizers of the 2012 convention, and a lot of the national groups that come to town, since we're federated with them, will be looking to us to help with the guiding, the getting permits, the making sure people that come to protest have a place to stay. And we're going to be using Bridge the Gap to go back to try to at least get the message out that the city is here for both sides, Democrats and conservatives, and that they're going to make room for everybody to have their voice heard and to try to make sure that we have a plan for this convention to be safe and both sides be able to get their voice heard in a peaceful manner.
So your organization, Robert, Action NC, has lobbied the city council to pass measures that would require CMPD to reveal expenditures from the $50 million or so that is coming from a federal grant that they're getting for security at the RNC. Why is that a concern to you?
So, you know, when we look back at even the past convention, the convention in 2012, there wasn't a good job done on the city's part. I don't blame the police department. I blame the city because the police department works for the city on letting us know what type of equipment were being purchased. One of the things that came up was the Stingray equipment, which, you know, fools cell phone towers, and the police are able to intercept cell phone calls. And people may remember, I think WFAE covered it. It got to be a civil liberties concern. It had to go all the way to court. That plus, you know, other equipment that's been bought that we don't hear about, like long-range acoustical devices that CMPD has not said openly that they have. These are the kind of things that we want to know about, because the convention lasts 5 days, but the equipment stays here that can be used against citizens during protests for a long period of time. I think the confusion keeps coming that we're asking for CMPD to give us their security plan. We're not asking for them to give us their security plan. We're asking them to let us know what militarized and surveillance equipment they are purchasing. I don't think that that's going to interfere with their security plan. We're not asking them how and when they're going to use it. We're asking what they're purchasing and being transparent in what they're purchasing.
But Robert's group, correct me if I'm wrong, Chief, they want 30 days advance notice given to the public of military-grade surveillance and crowd control equipment that you may be buying with this $50 million. And you have said that divulging how that money will be spent would adversely impact the integrity of the safety plan. Are you guys on different pages here?
Probably. They're one and the same. The security plan is going to really dictate what we buy. But I think what's missing from the conversation is there's a procurement process with the city that must be followed. Therefore, anything that we're purchasing goes through that process. So it's not as if I can go out and purchase anything and have nobody scrutinize what I'm doing. That is always the case. I don't know that I would trust myself being able to just buy anything I wanted. So the city manager has a process. Council, dictates how the city manager operates the city. And so we have a process that we're going to follow, just like we did in 2012. And then on the back end, we release everything that's been purchased for everybody to scrutinize, review, and determine what will and will not be kept.
Aside from the Stingray equipment, which Robert referenced a minute ago, that we did do several programs on back in 2012, whenever it was, and it enables you to surreptitiously, as people pass through the Stingray ray, whatever it is, for you to pick up phone conversations, or at least phone numbers and things like that.
The phone identifier,
okay,
yes.
So aside from that, what did you buy for the Democratic Convention?
There's a list. I can't even tell you all
have
the things
that we
bought. Have you
used that equipment since the Democratic
Convention?
Yes,
because we bought things like protective equipment for our officers.
Mm-hmm.
I would anticipate we'd do the same thing this time.
But are there offensive or defensive weaponry that you have used in the intervening years?
Offensive and defensive. Well, we use everything that we have defensively. We don't proactively use anything. That's the whole point of the sequence that I talked about earlier, of our responding to unrest and violence.
So when you sit down to decide what you're going to buy, you don't have to be specific.
Sure.
Are you going to be augmenting what you already have, replacing what you already
have?
Yes.
It really mostly, Mike, is going to be replacement, updating a lot of the equipment that we might need. We have protective gear for our officers that needs to be enhanced. We've seen that over the years. So that's pretty much how we're going to approach it. And make no mistake, we have other partners, federal partners as well, who are a part of this work who would purchase things as well.
So Robert Dawkins, what's your biggest concern about how this money will be spent? And is it basically on what kinds of equipment they may buy, or the fact that you don't know and others don't know what it is they're buying?
Well, I think it's on both sides there, Mike. First, when we're talking procurement, if city council is saying they have no input on what CMPD buys, and we're not going to see what CMPD buys until afterwards, was there any oversight and was there transparency? Because once something is bought, it's bought. So that's one issue. Secondly, on the procurement part, if city council doesn't see what's being bought and who's the people that's getting the bids to buy it, how do we know that minorities, women, contractors are getting a fair share and even buying and being able to be part of that procurement process if we're not going to know who bought it, how much they paid. Was there an open process to bid to get the equipment? So, I mean, it's on both of those fronts.
If I could respond, yeah. Sure. The only way we put things out to bid is just that. We put them out to bid. There's an RFP, and people who are in that line of work who provide those services bid according to the price point, and they determine, and we determine from there which vendor to select.
It's hard to talk about this without knowing precisely what you're looking at.
It is. Let's do this. Okay. If I were to say we need new helmets for our officers because they're defensive, Mike, not offensive, and we want to make sure we get the best, we're going to put that order out for however many hundred or thousand helmets we need, and those people who provide and build those helmets, make those helmets, are going to be able to bid so that we can contract to have them delivered for our officers.
But isn't most of what you're going to end up buying equipment, or I guess it's mostly equipment, that or materials that are coming from highly specialized companies?
The vast majority, yes. So
not buying this from Target.
No. I wouldn't risk the safety of our officers buying a lot of things that we need from Target. So the other piece of this is they're a limited number. It's not like we're buying gloves that anybody can manufacture. Right. These are going to be specialized protective gear that we're going to be putting out to bid, and namely, there are very few people who actually can manufacture.
So CMPD and Action NC, you and Robert Dawkins' organization, are getting together by starting these conversations about policing, public safety, and community impact called Bridging the Difference. Will this be, what we're talking about right now, a topic, Robert, of those conversations?
So there's no way that we're going to be at the table to discuss transparency and not just concentrate on the conservatives and the progressives, this comment. It also has to be CMPD and them being transparent. So, yes, we will be continuing to talk about that, but we're open to being part of the process, and we plan to talk about this as an overall picture. A lot of the things that people go and they compare when they look at conventions and say, oh, my God, look, there was violence between, like, progressives and conservatives. That's rarely happened. What you've seen more, especially when people use the convention in 1968 as a example, wasn't between progressives and conservatives. It was the police having a heavy hand in being able to go out and beat protesters. So transparency on what the police are doing is also a component of this, not just what's going to happen between the rioters or protesters or whatever people want to call them. It also comes down to how the police are going to respond, because that's been the history of conventions. Most of the time, it hasn't been groups fighting each other. It's been groups fighting the police.
I love that. And this is what I'll tell you. In 68, that's not the history of the Charlotte Police Department at the time, and the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department now. And 2012 is a good indicator how we approach it and every other protest that we've seen since.
The first of these conversations is November the 15th, right around the corner, at Johnson C. Smith University. And one of the things you'll be addressing at that session is police accountability. There's been a loud and clear call around the country from the African-American community for more accountability and more transparency. If you can't talk about some of the things you're planning for the convention, how can you be transparent and how can they trust your accountability?
Sure. Judge me by my history, and I don't know what I'm buying yet. So I think it's premature to even talk about what we're going to get. Here's what I'll tell you: the real impetus for this is a conversation, because we have it in a vacuum. I can go to a black church and have a conversation, and we come out with specific themes that we talk about. I can go to a Rotary Club, have the same kind of conversation, but we, for whatever reason, don't get together to have them, to find common ground, so that any extreme that might come to this city will stand out like a sore thumb, and we know where to prepare and to address and prioritize so that we can prevent anything negative from happening.
And I know that the both of you want to have all these different perspectives come together, all these community perspectives, so you want people in the community to be at these meetings, to share. You're going to break into small groups, et cetera, but also to talk and share ideas. And the usual suspects usually, and I don't mean that in the police way, but they come to these meetings. They're community leaders. They're people who are actively involved, whether they're leaders or not. And sometimes the people you really need to hear from and you really need to talk to are, they don't want any part of this. They don't want to get near you. So how do you have that conversation with those people?
Well, Mike, first of all, everybody likes to get near me, so I would debate that piece right there.
I don't
seriously,
mean you personally.
No, I know. The way we do it is we take the conversation to them. That's the difference. We're starting at Johnson C. Smith on November 15th at 6 o'clock. Then we're going to go to East Charlotte. Hopefully El Camino Church wants to host, looking to go to South Charlotte. We want to take this conversation to everybody across the spectrum who wants to engage in it.
And Robert, I only have a minute left here, maybe 45 seconds. You also want to talk about access and opportunity and bias and privilege. What does all of that mean?
It all means that while we're looking at things, we need to figure a way to get out of our silos and work together. And there are some issues that African Americans and people of color need to address right front up forward with the white community and the more affluent community. And some of the things that never factor into the conversation are things like implicit bias, white supremacy, those issues. And what happens is we all wind up with different definitions, and we can't find common ground because people are stuck on just the definitions that they have, and it may not be true. Like if someone calls you a racist, doesn't mean that you're a bigot. And I think people get those two terms mixed up.
Robert Dawkins is political director for Action NC and the founder and state organizer for Safe Coalition NC. He's been here with the CMPD Chief Kerr Putney. And the first of these initiative meetings is November the 15th at Johnson C. Smith University. We'll put information on that on our website. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.